Hey guys, welcome to episode 9 of the Where Do I Begin podcast. If you're new here, I am your host Lola. Hope you've all had a chance to listen to episode 8. It was packed with lots of gems with our special guest Debs. But yeah, if you haven't had a chance to listen to episode 8, please do go have a listen. I'm sure you'll find it quite beneficial. Before I go ahead into today's topic, I have to apologize to you guys because this episode is meant to have been released last week, but I've been going through a lot of transitions. So I started a new job and all that good stuff. I had my graduation ceremony. That's just me letting you into my life a little bit, but maybe we'll do more of that in the next season of the podcast. But yeah, so it's been very, very busy for me. I've not had a chance to sort of sit down and record this episode for you guys. But I am back. And before we go any further, you all know we have to read out this disclaimer. But before we even get to the disclaimer, I feel like I need to make a little public service announcement. Nothing to be, I guess, worried about. And that's just to let you guys know that this will be the penultimate episode before the final episode, penultimate, for season 1. So the way I've decided to structure the podcast is to do it in seasons. So each season will be roughly about 10 episodes each. And once I release episode 10, which will be the episode after this one, I will be going on a mini hiatus. So I feel like it's needed. Like I mentioned earlier, I started a new job. So one, I need time to settle into that and focus for a little bit. But also, I also need time to just take a little break and plan ahead for season 2. For those who are not aware about how, you know, I decided to go forward with the podcast and how it all came about, I did speak a little bit about this on the very first episode, but what some of you may not have been aware of was before I actually ever recorded the first episode, I had already planned what I was going to speak about each week a year in advance. I'd already given a lot of thoughts and planning into it, and I think that is what has helped with the consistency so far. So yeah, I would like to continue with that model for season 2. So this is also an opportunity for you guys to, one, catch up on any episodes that you may have missed, and also number 2, if you guys have any specific topics that I've covered so far or any other things that I may not have even touched on that you would like me to discuss in season 2, either regarding investing or the investment management industry in general, whatever it is that you would like me to discuss further, please do not hesitate to like drop me a DM, send me an email, and then I will obviously work on that for you guys for season 2, because I want to make sure I'm providing you guys with information and content that is actually useful and beneficial. So far, the feedback I've received has been positive, and you guys are loving the podcast, so I would definitely love to keep it that way. Hope that makes sense. I'll still be posting on the page. It just wouldn't be snippets from the podcast necessarily. So I'll still be posting useful information surrounding investing and all that good stuff on the page. So although I'm going on a break, I'm just going on a break from actually like recording podcasts. Does that make sense? Until I've you know, planned for season 2 and I'm ready to start season 2. It would only be for a few months, so I'll definitely be back before the end of the year. But yeah, do make sure you're following the page as well for any updates and I guess the launch date for season 2. So yeah, hopefully I come up with some more exciting stuff with you guys. And I just wanted to say again, thank you so much for joining me on this journey. I just can't believe we're in episode 9, basically. But yeah, enough of me rambling on. Let me get to the disclaimer so we can get into today's episode, which is actually a fun episode. So I do hope you guys will enjoy it. All the information presented or spoken about on this podcast is for educational and general information use only. This is not investment or financial advice. Therefore, any information discussed should not be interpreted as personalized investment advice. Before making an investment decision, please do your own research, verify information for accuracy, and speak to a financial advisor. Please be aware that liability for any investment decisions made falls entirely on you. Any brands, companies, or investment platforms referenced during the duration of this podcast or future episodes are for educational purposes only. This podcast is not sponsored by any of the brands or companies mentioned. Any information or advice given by guests solely represents the opinion of the guests and is independent of the Where Do I Begin podcast. So for today's episode, I want to talk about the top 10 investing myths that you may have heard, that you may have seen on social media, that can actually affect the returns in your investment portfolio. Now, the thing about these myths, basically, is that there is some truth to them. But then I guess that's why they become myths, because those truths, do not necessarily span over a long period of time. They might be true for a specific period of time, and then maybe in the long term, they're not necessarily true. But we'll get into that as we go along. The thing with investing myths and why I wanted to do this episode and why I thought it was useful was this is actually birthed from an article I read online a few years ago. I did not realize that this would actually be useful information years later, now that I have a podcast on all things investing. But yeah, I guess that's how God works. And as they say, no knowledge is ever wasted. So this has worked out beautifully. I did not know I was going to be referring back to this article years later. And so yeah, we're just going to talk about, I guess, some of the things that were spoken about in this article, which I feel like would be beneficial for you guys as you start or as you continue on your investing journey. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, investing myths usually start out when someone or a group of people make an observation that is accurate. But the issue with most investors, and that's whether they're retail investors or Reddit investors. I know you guys are going to think I have it for the Reddit investors, but I don't. Just a little bit of humor there. And even sometimes accredited investors, the main issue when it comes to investing or investing myths is that they sometimes don't take into account context. So like I mentioned earlier, these so-called investing myths may only be accurate for a specific period of time, or they may be true within a certain context, i.e. a certain market or what was going on in the specific industry at that particular point in time. And because those ideas or those myths were true for that period of time, sometimes people sort of take it as gospel that is how, you know, these particular stocks, for example, will continue to behave forever. And that is not always true. And usually also the simpler the idea or the myths are, the more widely they tend to spread. Obviously, the media also plays a great role in propagating some of these myths, which is why you can easily get into debates about certain stocks, whether they're worth investing in or not, or, you know, whether they're value investments or growth investments. You know, you can have all these debates online with people. It's also a result of the role that the media at large, but more specifically is what the financial media plays. And sometimes that's intentional because they have an agenda, and sometimes that is just a coincidence, basically. So without further ado, I'm gonna get to the very first myth, investing myths. Do bear with me and my THs. They can be quite difficult for me to pronounce, but so long as you understand what I'm talking about, that's the most important thing. So the first myth that I wanted to tackle was this whole idea of you can't beat the market. And this is something to some extent that I still strongly believing that you can't always beat the market. I don't think it's impossible to beat the market, but I do think that you can't always beat the market. This myth is particularly actually related to funds, so mutual funds specifically. If you're not entirely sure what mutual funds are, I'm just going to explain them briefly. I have mentioned them in previous episodes before. They're essentially professionally managed funds by asset managers that basically comprise of pulling money together with other investors to basically purchase stocks, bonds, equities, all that good stuff. So that's what mutual funds are. So the reason why this particularly relates to mutual funds is because most actively managed funds don't tend to beat the market benchmark. So the myth pretty much originates from this idea of if professionally managed funds that are actively managed cannot beat the market benchmark, then how can individual investors essentially beat the market? Does that make sense? So when you look at the way mutual funds actually work, it's not a surprise that majority of them tend to underperform. And the reason for this is because the mutual fund management business has more to do with the distribution of assets in different asset classes, and not necessarily like the performance of the funds. So in order to outperform the market, basically over the long term, it does require a bit of contrarian thinking. So you have to think outside the box, which may lead to, your funds or your portfolio underperforming in the short term. But if you truly believe in the strategy that you have, and you can stick with it, then over the long term, they do have a chance to sort of outperform the market. So the whole myth of you can't beat the market, yes, there is some truth to it, but it's also not an impossible thing. But that specifically tends to apply to mutual funds or actively managed funds. So on to the next myth. The next myth basically talks about the market, the stock market, essentially being like a casino. Now, I don't particularly believe the stock market is like a casino, but we'll address it basically. So an outsider's perspective, basically, that doesn't know the ins and outs of investing, that is not necessarily clued up on, valuation metrics, or does not work in the industry, it could really look like people were just gambling. And I've always said it from the very beginning of this podcast that investing is not gambling. So when we had the whole issue previously with stocks like GameStop and AMC, etc., a lot of people were essentially gambling because they were making decisions off of hype. They weren't necessarily making well-informed decisions before they purchased certain stocks. So they were just going off of whatever was being said in the media, or they were making decisions based on the fear of missing out, also known as FOMO. But that is not investing. But I can see why people would do that, essentially, because they're not necessarily clued up on, I guess, the core principles that govern the investing world, and that can potentially lead you to wealth creation in the long term. So to them, essentially, they're just like a casino. They call it investing, but really and truly, they're actually gambling. The real thing to keep in mind is that if you approach investing in a systematic manner, then over the long term, most likely the odds will be in your favor. If you use investment strategies that I've spoken about in previous episodes, that can help you manage your portfolio risk, and also limit your losses, and essentially provide you an opportunity to I guess gain long-term returns that are sustainable, if that makes sense. But yeah, as an investor, essentially you get to choose or decide for yourself, how much risk you're willing to take. And when you buy and sell, your investments with patience and a strategy, it doesn't have to be, the market doesn't have to be a gambler's market for you. You just need to, be a bit more clued up on how the market works, what type of investor you are, what your risk tolerance is, what your investment goals are. So basically, everything I've been speaking about from episode 1 to 8, you need to have essentially all that knowledge, or at least some of that knowledge, for you to be able to make well-informed decisions and not feel like anytime you make an investment decision, you're gambling because the market could go up or down. And for you to just feel more confident basically the decisions that you're making with regards to your investments. So moving on to the third myth. The third myth is that blue chip stocks are the best stocks to own. For those that might not be aware of what blue chip companies are, they're essentially multinational companies that have been in operation for a number of years. So when you think about companies like Coca-Cola, Disney, Walmart, McDonald's, companies that are essentially like dominant leaders in their respective industries, those are the kind of companies that we call blue chip stocks or blue chip companies. Now, the reason why people believe that blue chip stocks are the best stocks to own is because they tend to have a good track record of strong and reliable earnings, and that the returns in blue chip stocks tend to be quite steady. But there is a downside to that. Whilst their earnings are strong, they're reliable, the returns are steady, it also means that in terms of arbitrage opportunities, you won't be able to achieve that with blue chip stocks because they rarely, really ever beat the market. So they're good to invest in, if you're I guess like a low risk investor and you want to know that your returns would be sort of guaranteed. But if all your money are put into blue chip stocks because they're reliable and you're guaranteed a decent return, then you miss out on the opportunity to invest in growth stocks that can even give you bigger returns and potentially lead you on the path to wealth creation and generational wealth essentially. So that's just something to keep in mind. So it's not that blue chip stocks are not the best stocks to own. You should definitely have them in your portfolio, but as I always say, it's also important to diversify. Too much of anything is not good for you. So we appreciate the reliable earnings. We appreciate the steady returns of blue chip stocks, but they cannot be the only stocks you essentially hold in your portfolio. And on the flip side of that, there have been a few, not a lot, but a few blue chip stocks over the years who have failed, but usually they tend to last for a number of years, some of them a few generations. So it's good to hold a few of those, but it's not to say that just because they've been around for a number of years doesn't mean that they can't go bust tomorrow. Yeah, that's just something else to sort of keep in mind. Okay, so going on to the fourth myth, this one pretty much talks about the PE ratio. Again, I've spoken about this in a previous episode, but just in case you haven't listened to the episode, the PE ratio is basically the price earnings multiple, or price earnings ratio, and basically it just essentially looks at the relationship between the price of the stock relative to its earnings. And this myth that says you should only buy stocks with a low PE ratio, there is some truth to it, because usually I guess the general consensus is anything that has a PE ratio, I don't know, less than 10, for example, is a value stock. So it would be a better stock to invest in if you're a long-term investor. And then anything that has a PE ratio greater than 10 is a growth stock. And if you're a growth investor, then that might be what you may want to sort of invest in. But as I've mentioned in previous episodes, as amazing of a metric that the PE ratio is, because it's one of the quickest ways to value a stock, you cannot use it in isolation. You know, you have to look at other metrics, you have to take in other factors into account when you're trying to evaluate a stock before you decide if this is a good investment for you or not. It is a quick way to you know, value a stock, but you have to look at other valuation metrics and take into account other factors when it comes to valuating a stock or a company as a whole. If you want to know more on, I guess, valuation, again, check out previous episodes. That would definitely put it into more context for you. One of the reasons why I guess believing this myth of you should only buy stocks with a low PE is quite problematic is that sometimes companies that have low PE ratios are companies that actually often struggle to grow. So not all companies that have a low PE ratio are basically good value investments or good value stocks. So that's just something to be aware of. And research also shows that a lot of money has actually been made over the last 10 years on stocks that have been trading on pretty high PE ratios. So that's just something to keep in mind as well. But the same way this myth addresses you should only buy stocks with a low PE ratio is the same way on the flip side, you should not only buy stocks with a high PE ratio. Does that make sense? So you always have to look at everything holistically before you make an investment decision. So if you're a value investor, you're looking to invest in something long term, definitely look at companies with low PE ratios, but also make sure you're taking into account other factors. And one of those other factors as well could be the earnings multiple, and so you can look at things like the valuation metric EBIT to EBITDA. I don't really want to bore you guys with that, but there are loads of other things you can look at that are less complicated if you're not really into valuation metrics, that could help you basically assess if this investment is a potentially, you know, good and profitable investment for you or not. But again, to find out more, you're going to have to check out previous episodes, because I don't want to make this too long repeating I guess things I've already sort of spoken about previously. So do bear with me if it feels like I keep referring to previous episodes. But yeah, all the information you need is on there. So going on to the next myth. This one is actually a very popular one, and the myth is you must buy low and sell high. Obviously, the idea behind this is if you buy low and sell high, you should be able to make a profit. However, this is not the only way to make money when it comes to investing or trading. Research has also actually showed that sometimes it turns out that buying high and selling even higher tends to be more profitable. So if you didn't know that you learned something new today. So that's something else to keep in mind. The reason for this is because the best returns are essentially made when stocks are said to be overvalued. But that's only obviously if the stock price continues to rise. The problem of waiting for stocks to always get cheaper is that you may end up missing out on a significant portion of the bull market, essentially. And this is the problem with when you try to sort of, like, I guess, time the market. I've always said that it's not a bad thing to try and time the market, but you can't always do it perfectly, and that shouldn't be the only strategy you have. So the important thing to know here is, sometimes you may want to go on the other side of the spectrum and buy high and sell even higher, as opposed to buying low and then selling high, because that's when you may really be able to achieve the high returns that you're after. Buying high and selling even higher is I guess known as the momentum slash growth strategy. So all of this essentially really just depends on what type of investor you are, which is heavily dependent on one, your personality, your risk tolerance, and your investment goals. And then depending on what type of investor you are and how much money you have to invest, of course, that will also dictate what strategy you're likely to lean towards. So as we mentioned earlier, some of these myths, we're not saying they're completely false, but again, you can't take them solely as gospel just because there's some truth to it. It's just to evaluate and assess everything holistically, basically, before making your investment decisions. So essentially, you can buy low sometimes and sell high, but there's also room for you to buy high and sell even higher and make just as much money, if not more. So it's just something else to keep in mind. So going on to the next myth. This one I actually heavily subscribe to. But when I reread this article, I'd actually forgotten about this particular point. But when I reread it as I was preparing for this episode, I was like, oh, this is actually a great point. And this myth is the fact that you should switch to bonds when you retire. The reason why I guess this myth became a popular thing or was a big deal is because in the past we didn't really have like an aging population like we do now. So it made sense for you to say by the time you're retiring, it's not exactly the smartest thing to put your money in, I guess, stocks that are super risky, because you stand a chance of losing the money. You stand a greater chance if you invest in high risk stocks, to you stand a greater chance of essentially losing the money. And obviously, when you're nearing retirement, what you're really craving is stability. But the problem with that is, for you to actually make money from passive income or passive investing, which is, investing in things like bonds or I guess index funds, for you to actually make money, substantial amount of money, or gain substantial returns, it will require you to actually have a very large portfolio of bonds, for you to actually make enough money that you may feel like you can live on when you're near retirement. But really, what I guess we all need to be thinking about as we're on this investing journey, and even when we get to that stage where we're thinking of retirement, is that compound interest is actually king. And the income you earn from bonds will never grow as much as the income you gain from stocks. Another thing to think about is the fact that people are living longer. As I mentioned earlier, we have an aging population now. So when you think about it, if you retire at 60 now, depending on how long God gives us to live, you may still need to essentially fund your lifestyle for another 30 to 40 years. To do this, you know, your savings need to grow if you have them, your investments need to grow if you have them. So essentially, the reason why even at retirement, you shouldn't just switch to just bonds, is because you may not have enough essentially to live on during that period. So what actually makes sense is that even in retirement, you should still have a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds as well as other asset classes, just to make sure that you know you're covered. I mean, one way to go about it to still ensure that your portfolio is quite stable is maybe to have a bigger proportion of your portfolio holding bonds as an asset class, and then the rest could be divided it between the rest of the other asset classes. Does that make sense? So that way you still have the safety of investing in bonds, but you also have exposure to other asset classes who are likely to you know, grow quicker and give you higher returns. Because over the past few decades, interest rates are actually on average much lower than they used to be. So in terms of the yields on bonds, they're not as great as they used to be back then, where switching to bonds when you retire was the smartest thing to do. So times have changed and times have evolved, and that's why when I started talking about this, addressing this myths earlier in the episode, we may refer to them as myths, but it's not because they're completely false. It's because at some point there was some truth to them, you know. But we also have to look at how the market has evolved and what's going on around us, and you know, look at things holistically and not just say, because this particular ideology was true in this context at a particular period of time or for a specific period of time, it must mean it must be true all the time. So yeah, that's just something to think about. So moving on to the next myth. The next myth talks about you must avoid volatility and risk as an investor. Again, I've mentioned this several times in previous episodes, and I think this might even be one of the first things I spoke about actually on the very first episode, is that you cannot call yourself an investor or you cannot get into investing without wanting to take some level of risk. In fact, it's impossible to invest without an element of risk being attached. Like, investing basically comes with risk. What you have a choice over is how much risk you're willing to take, because ultimately the truth is that investors are rewarded for taking risks. So trying to avoid risk and volatility means you don't want to invest, means you don't want to get, you know, good returns. Because every time you make a decision to sell your stock, every time you think, oh, this stock is not going to do well, or there's going to be a bear market, you're essentially hurting your returns over the long term. In the short term, it may seem like the smartest thing to do, but again, this all comes to the whole, you know, timing the market efficiently. It's very likely you might end up selling a stock way too early and lose more money over the long term. In the short term, it seems like you're protecting yourself, but over the long term, when you look at the numbers, most likely you've lost a lot of money along the way. So it's just something to keep in mind. The best way to manage volatility and portfolio risk, again, is by diversifying your investments, you know, using asset allocation to spread risk. All of your investments will carry a certain amount of risk of but yeah will carry a certain amount of risk, but if you diversify across multiple asset classes, then you can minimize and mitigate some of the losses that could be associated with those risks. Essentially, diversification allows you to own some risky assets which can generate strong returns without risking your entire portfolio. So whilst on one hand, risks should definitely be embraced, It should definitely also be managed if you don't want to lose all your money. So that's definitely something else to keep in mind. So going on to the next myth, we're number eight now, so we've got two more to go. This may be one you've also heard of, it's quite popular. And that is this whole saying of gold is the safest investment, or rather, gold is a safe haven. I'm sure you must have heard this before. The idea of investing in gold is definitely very tempting, because at one time it did serve as collateral for fiat currencies. So if you haven't actually listened to the crypto episode currency, the cryptocurrency episode, so that's episodes 7 and 8. Do go have a listen. I do touch on the history of money there. So this will make sense as to why, I guess gold being a safe haven was like a big deal, or is still a big deal actually today. Because this is still something I hear people say quite often. The reason why I guess this ideology or this myth came about, like I said before, it was often used as collateral for fiat currencies, but the whole idea of this was also based on the fact that, or should I say, on the belief that fiat currencies will lose value due to money printing. And whilst this might be true, this whole idea is actually a little bit flawed. And that's because most people do not invest long-term savings in fiat currencies. Most people actually invest their long-term savings in stocks and other assets. With that being said, though, gold can still be a stabilizing element, when you add it to your portfolio. And whilst you may never lose money from investing in gold, I always say this, so again, there is some truth to it being a safe haven. Investing in gold does not actually offer you a reliable return. And the reason for this is because it doesn't pay interest. It's a commodity, it doesn't pay interest or dividends, and its intrinsic value does not really change by that much. Does that make sense? So in terms of, arbitrage opportunities that you would get with stocks and other asset classes, you don't have that when it comes to gold. Gold can be used also as a hedge against volatility and inflation. So it does have its benefits, but it should definitely not be looked at as a route to wealth creation, because the historical value that gold had previously is not what it currently has now. It still has a pretty, a pretty good value, and that's why it's a great stabilizing, I guess, elements to definitely add to your portfolio. But the same way gold can be used to hedge against volatility and inflation, there are inflation linked bonds that you can invest in. So these are bonds that take into account the effects of inflation and will protect your investments. There are stocks, and other asset classes that have generated higher returns essentially than investing in gold ever will, and have also been great to hedge against inflation. So it just takes a bit of research, and yeah, you can be on your way, and you don't have to rely only on gold potentially to either stabilize your portfolio, or for you to feel like whenever the economy is doing badly, let me sell all my investments and just go put it into gold. That's not the wisest decision to make, I don't think. But again, with all these things, do you speak to your financial advisor? Do you get some, some professional advice with regards to these things? But these are just myths to, I guess, think about when you are making your investment decisions. So going on to number nine, the next myth. This is actually quite funny. I find this hilarious. Which is that well-known companies make good investments. You will hear a lot of people, particularly on social media, often suggesting that, owning a company you like and respect, Because if you're buying things from these the products and services that these companies market to you, then surely they must be good investments. If they're very popular, surely they must be good investments. And whilst I have said in a previous episode that, if you're not sure in what to invest in, you can start with, companies that you like. That's just potentially a starting point. That is not actually, that cannot be like an actual investment strategy. You obviously have to look a bit deeper into the company, why you like them, what their mission statement is, what their financials are, their earnings, their profitability, different things before you actually make a decision on whether this could potentially be a good investment for you or not. And I did mention that. So whilst on one hand I said if you have no clue what you want to invest in, you can start with companies that you like. I also spoke about having an investment strategy and basically making well-informed decisions when it comes to investing. So no, it's not true that well-known companies necessarily make good investments. Warren Buffett, the famous, one of the famous godfathers when it comes to investing, has famously said that he doesn't invest in companies he doesn't understand. So if you think about that, he didn't say he doesn't invest in companies he doesn't like. He says he doesn't invest in companies he doesn't understand. And I genuinely feel like that is that there's a lot of gems in that. Because how can you essentially devise an effective strategy or generate strong returns from an investment that you genuinely do not understand? In all you're getting, get understanding, as the Bible would say sometimes. But yeah, so it's something to definitely think about. Sometimes the companies you invest in may not necessarily be the most popular companies. They may be boring companies. They may not necessarily be the most exciting companies that are always in the news every other day. But if you understand the business model, if you understand what this company does, if you can see the trajectory of the companies, if you understand their financials, if you understand what they stand for and what the company stands for, sort of aligns with your morals and values, then that might be a better investment for you than investing in a company that's always making the headlines all the time. I know some people would say, all publicity is good publicity, but when it comes to investing, that's definitely not always the case. Just because it's a popular company, and a lot of people may be buying into it because they're always in the news, doesn't mean, it's a good investment. So that's just something, to keep in mind. Another thing to keep in mind when it comes to this particular myth is that popular companies are often overvalued, which makes strong returns very unlikely. They also attract competition, which eventually erodes any profit margins you may think you might potentially get from investing in a well-known company. Quantitative research has also shown that over the long term, it is actually the stocks that steadily compound earnings that often generate the most reliable long-term returns. I'm going to say that again for the people at the back. Quantitative investing, quantitative research has shown that over the long term, it is the stocks that steadily compound earnings that often generate the most reliable long-term returns. And these stocks are not necessarily the most well-known stocks. So it's just something else, to keep in mind when you're making your investment decisions. It's very easy and very tempting to invest in a company because, it's well known or everybody has an interest in this company. But sometimes looking on the back end, it might even still be the same industry, but just, looking on the back end, for example, and investing in the company on the back end might turn out to be more profitable for you than investing in the company that essentially is just out in the media all the time. So when I say back end, this is what I mean. So I was listening to the news earlier this week, and the guy I was in was talking about, some investments that he's been doing and he's been making, and he decided to go invest in cardboard during this pandemic. And him choosing to invest in cardboard actually increased the returns from his portfolio by about 10, to 11%, which is a pretty amazing return. Given that, the market has been quite volatile throughout this whole pandemic period. Now, why did this guy decide to invest in cardboard? I'm sure a lot of us didn't even think about investing in cardboard and in a company that, produces cardboard, for example, during this whole pandemic. He thought about it because he thought everybody's working from home. Obviously, now the economy is opening up a bit, but at the start of the pandemic, when they decided to invest in this company, he thought everybody's working from home. We're all on lockdown, which means we're making a lot of online orders. So, what do our orders come in when they get delivered to our houses? Most of the time, cardboard boxes. So, for that reason alone, he's been able to generate, strong returns, and that is an unlikely company that, or an unlikely industry that most people, it wouldn't have even crossed your mind to be like, oh, let me invest in a company that makes cardboard. For some people, it might be, let me invest in a company that specializes in e-commerce, for example, e-commerce or digital payments or tech. And whilst those have also come in very handy during this pandemic, another way to I guess mitigate risks in your portfolio, especially when the market is quite volatile and unstable, is sometimes to look for the, I guess, the not so obvious company that will perform in very well in times that I guess times when we're going through like a downturn. Does that make sense? And I'm not just talking about value stocks necessarily, just things that are unusual, that are on the back end, for example. With the example that I gave, for someone could have decided to invest in Amazon, which is not a bad investment. It's probably a great investment. It's not probably, Amazon is a great investment, but that's my opinion. But again, seek professional advice. Yeah, you could have decided to invest in Amazon. There's nothing wrong with that. But Amazon uses cardboard boxes to deliver to their customers. So you could have also invested in cardboard boxes. It just depends on, how you want to look at it. And for a retail investor, for example, maybe investing in Amazon would actually be too expensive because you don't have, up to 2K to invest in Amazon. But you can probably invest in a cardboard in a company that specializes in making cardboard and still manage to make a decent amount of returns and, make really strong returns. Maybe not on the level of Amazon, but at least close enough to start your investing journey. So yeah, that's just something else to keep in mind. But yeah, I just felt like this one was a myth that I really needed to sort of address, because it's a mistake that I see people making quite regularly. But yeah, well-known companies do not always make good investments. It's basically the lesson from that. And now to our final myth. The final myth basically talks about switching to defensive stocks if you think the market will crash. So every now and then, you hear a conversation in the news and in the financial media about, when the next stock market crash is or when it's likely to occur, that kind of talk. And as a result, you might also get some analysts or some people in the financial media who will start to sort of recommend, moving your money towards more defensive stocks. If you're not sure what defensive stocks are, they're basically companies like consumer staples, and utilities, basically companies that are less reactive to economic cycles. So basically, if the economy is doing badly, they will most likely be all right. They will not be affected at all. Or if they are affected, it would be very, very low impact. That's what defensive stocks are. So utilities, so energy, that kind of stuff. As I mentioned earlier, defensive stock, the defensive companies are definitely less sensitive to economic downturns. The only problem with this myth, though, is that most of the bear markets that are predicted don't materialize. So essentially, a lot of times when people are talking about a potential stock market crash, or when the next one is, they never actually really get it right. They never time it right. So with that being said, if you've just been moving your money, or your investment from, I don't know, growth stocks, for example, to defensive stocks, and then you don't actually get a market crash, you've essentially lost money in that transaction. So that's just something else to keep in mind, because when you move your money from, I don't know, like a growth stock, like a defensive stock, for example, you end up essentially overpaying for this defensive stocks. And then when the stock market actually doesn't crash, guess what? You sell the defensive stock at a discount, so you've lost money. So yeah, it's just something to keep in mind that just because people are speculating and that there might be a stock market crash, it doesn't mean it's time to sell your investments and move into defensive stocks, because you want to protect your investments. Because a lot of times the market crash never happens when they say it will happen. And even if you are thinking of moving your money, again, you need to look at the whole market holistically and do some in-depth research, so that you don't end up overpaying for a defensive stock and then end up selling at a discount. So the money you were trying to avoid losing, you end up losing anyway. So yeah, that's just something else to keep in mind. That brings us to the end of today's episode. I do hope you have enjoyed it. Again, my apologies I couldn't drop this last week, but it's here now. Thank you so much again for listening. Please do share, follow, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. Share with someone that you feel might find it useful. If you have any questions about anything said in this episode or future episodes, please do not hesitate to send a DM on Instagram at where do I begin _ pod. Or feel free to drop me an email at info.wheredoibeginpod@gmail.com. So yeah, thanks again, guys, for joining me. And I'll speak to you in our next and final episode for season one. I'm super, super excited. If we can get to 100 followers by then, I think I might do a giveaway just to celebrate the end of the season. So yeah, that's a hint. That's a hint. I will let you know that that's a hint. But honestly, we're really, really close. So it's definitely possible. But yeah, hope you found today's episode useful. And I will definitely talk to you guys soon. Take care.